primary ones, United Properties, Dana Franks from First Avenue, and at that time, Thor. And they said, well, Michael, would you help us create a food hub? And I said, I don't want to do a food hub. They said, well, I thought that's what you do. And I said, I do, but we're missing a golden once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. We're sitting here on the banks of the Mississippi. We're at the headwaters, and that we really could really control the narrative for the nation if we really think about this project as a way to become a lighthouse and a lightning rod for all things for global warming and climate change. And so I didn't want to see them squander what I call a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, our Panama Canal. And so I began to reach out to local environmental groups, and so a year ago we did a thing called Jamming for Justice. Out of that evolved a whole series of political action, what I call water resistance, and mobilization and organizations and nonprofits come together to really stop the city, if you will, and from going forward and squandering this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. So we really see this as a way to talk about reparations. How do we bring about right the wrongs of the past, right? And so today you will hear a conversation, these conversations on water. We're going to be talking about some of those, and we urge you to share your ideas. We're going to have a facilitator here, Mr. Arthur Himmelman. He's been very active with us, and you'll meet some of the folks who have been champions for really trying to make this project all that it can be. We're going to be looking at the city that wants to go to the state legislation and ask for $15 million bonding, our money. You know, and so we don't feel that we should be supporting the next generation of those who are already wealthy. We want to see if we can change the paradigm and really develop from the grassroots up with ideas that are birthed from this very rich, vibrant community. And so that's why we are and looking at the whole Mississippi as really a corridor for change. And so I'm really glad when Morgan and folks approached me. They have been working with us on this project. And so we're going to look at some of the history of this development. We're going to look at what presently some of the water resistance and the fight that some folks are working on to bring about this change. And then we're going to talk about what are some of the future visions and aspirations that some of us have, and we'd like to hear about your aspirations, some of your vision. We see this as a co-creation process because it is all going to take all of our tax dollars, right, are going to go. That's where that $15 million is going to come from, yours and mine and everybody on the north side's tax dollars. And so we want to make sure that we do this right, and we think that we have a way to really change the course of history and to change the paradigm and way things have been held so that it's much more inclusive, much more equitable, and much more remarkable. And so, again, we couldn't be here, wouldn't be here, if it was not for the indigenous residents that were here first. And so I want to introduce you to some of those leaders here from Minneapolis. And we want to bless this space. We want to honor this space. We want to honor the river. So I'd like to introduce you to Elizabeth Campbell.
I've been I back to Buffalo, you know, like the prophecy had been foretold, and things were happening, and it was the Buffalo that came through prayers. They came when those military from Fort Rice had all their weapons and tanks. Buffalo came to rescue the people. And so the women had a huge role. They sent out prayers. They had a whole huge teepee there. And so I think it was a success. It really was a success. But we have more work to do. We have a lot more work to do. Because what I've been told, the city of Minneapolis does not care how much they pollute these waters. And so we all have to come together, just like you hear every day in the news, how we need to be cognizant of the weather changing and all its forces that can cause this destruction. Because the water will fight back. The water will fight back. Poison. So I really think that that means that we are at the center of, and water surrounds us. That means. So I'm a history teacher. I'm a social studies teacher, and I had to teach myself in a way that wasn't the Wachiche way. That means the European perspective is not my perspective, because I was raised from a small child in the old way, and I can't think that way. And a lot of my people cannot think that way, because we cannot be conformed to white thinking. We just can't. We would succeed in all our policies. All our court cases we won, and no matter what you're taught in school, we won all the wars up until we were outnumbered in history. Think about it, you know. So I've been involved in a project that's very important to keep our heritage strong, our Native American and Dakota heritage strong here. Our people, such as Sheldon Wolfchild, he has written a history he's worked on for 15 years, a series of three films of the truth about Dakota history here. And in the first film, they talk about how we were supposed to get annuities to live on because the settlers took the land. Well, they just took that annuity and gave it to the settlers and starved the Indians. So they wonder why there was a Dakota uprising in 1862. But you see, it's time for the truth. And you know, I can't get a teaching job in Minneapolis schools because of the race-based atmosphere. Because they don't want to hear the truth. They don't want their white children being taught by a Native American teacher. And that's putting it plainly. But Sheldon has worked on this history, and he's joined together spiritual leaders from all the Dakota communities here, and they're strong. Their prayers are very strong, because a lot of our efforts are coming to be. And one of the things is that when the cavalry was here, when they were protecting the settlers, there were huge these boulders for each community, all the way to Standing Rock. That's behind its name, because of the sacred markers, what they are, the sacred markers that gather and they could pray there. So they knew where to go. They would have all these boulders. So when the Calvary came, they blew up all these markers except for one. And a Methodist church kept it safe. And so recently it was given back to the people. And also a group went clear to Rome to get the apologies from the people of Rome to change their narrative about Native Americans. So the narrative is changing. It takes time. And that's part of the history. And also, all along these rivers here, there's Dakota markers for when they would gather and come and pray. And they started a tourism center and on the St. Paul site. I think many of you have heard of it. It's a heritage center where they give tours of all of the landmarks and where the Dakota camp. This is all Dakota land. My ancestral many greats grandfather, Kichita Mambadi, War Eagle, he gathered all the Dakota bands in the 1700s. He fought everybody. He fought the Ojibwe, he fought the settlers, and he chased all the Ojibwe back to Canada. And so I know my history. I think it should be told to all our children. I know all of our relatives are watching this bird. And if you were to take, it's Washteshni, if you take pictures when people are praying, but if you take a picture of that water, you'll see spirits in there. And that water is living. Some people say we're the stewards of the land and we take care of the land. No, the land takes care of us. The water takes care of us. And so we all have to be careful of how we use our carbon footprint or whatever. And so try it sometime, you know. You say, well, natives don't know anything about scientific theory or whatever. Well, if you were to be really pollutant and you have a bad attitude towards the water, it's going to be poison. But if you pray over it and you take care of it, you'll see these angels, you'll see these spirits, and they prove that scientifically. So, with that, I say, Mitaku Ye Kawasi, that means you are all my relatives, and I Opila Minamiya. So, I think.
Site has now been closed down. You can't get into it. But back in 2014, it was still open. And I listened to him congratulate his management teams across the world for evading pollution control laws. So the people, the managers at Northern Metals Recycling, get bonuses if they break the law of our land that the MPCA and our state legislature put into effect about clean air and clean water. So back in 2014, we fast forward a little bit. I just want to give you one hint. You see that? That is, what is that? Anybody know? That is the Riverside plant of Xcel Energy. And up until 2007, it was a coal burning plant. They made it into a natural gas plant, which makes it cleaner, but it's still the petrochemical cycle. And it doesn't burn so hot, and it's not nearly as poisonous as it was. I was first in the fight in 1980 against Sherco 4, 5, and 6 that are also Xcel Energy plants on the Mississippi River that were all coal fired. We never thought we were going to win at Sherco 3. The agreement that we won back in the day, when the MPCA really did represent people much better, is we stopped Sherco 4, 5, and 6, and Sherco 3 had to put in scrubbers, the first coal scrubbers in this state, and the state of the art, and they had to clean up the Black Dog plant down in St. Paul and this Riverside plant. So you might say I've been fighting this fight since I was a youngster. Now I'm a grandmother with a 10-year-old. Granddaughter, Barbity Benz. And my little Asa was 3 and a half. And I continue to fight this fight with all of you and all of the people who love the water, the earth, and the trees, and our lives. Stop. Right now, Northern Metals got caught first in 2014 when we got the MPCA to start monitoring the river again. You know how often they were monitoring this river, testing the air in 2014? Once every 12 days for 12 hours. And under the Clean Air Act, you have to tell the plants when you're going to test so they can shut down. That's still the law here. And so we begged the MPCA for just 3 months. They were going to take that one monitor off the river, the 909 on the Lowry Bridge. They were going to get rid of that one air testing monitor and put it in western Minnesota on a hog farm. Which is fine. Marshall, Minnesota shouldn't have to smell manure. I get it. But what happened was, in that 3 months that we got them to test every 6 days for 24 hours. They didn't catch GAF, doggone it. They didn't catch the asphalt plant, which is the, well, excuse me. It's the ass end of the chemical, petrochemical process. It's the last thing. It's what they make out of coal tar after they make plastic and diesel and gas. So we didn't get them caught, but they caught Northern Metals with their 10 PMs. And we rejoiced. They were going to finally do something. They gave them a $5,000 fine. And Northern Metals, because remember, EMR tells them to fight rather than pay anything. They said, you can't tell us to do that. And they took the MPCA to court saying that the Clean Air Act and their tests did not apply to them. It was really, really an egregious thing in 2015. And they didn't get fined. They got a huge fine then. They had to pay a $2.1 million settlement. $600,000 of that came to the city of Minneapolis. They did that not because they broke the law with the air pollution. The they lied to the judge. The judge frowns on being lied to. And their attorneys lied to the judge about some very important facts. People thought we won. No, they lost. They lost. If they hadn't lied, nothing would have happened to them at all. And now we are in court with them again. And this is where we are with Northern Metals. We caught them with a whistleblower. How many of you heard about this news? There's a whistleblower inside Northern Metals. An employee was so egregiously harmed, his conscience was harmed, that he told on him to the MPCA. And the MPCA then sent him back and said he had to get pictures and everything, and so he had to go back for 3 more weeks and surreptitiously get photographs of what they had done. And so then MPCA said, you are changing your data because the Air Pollution Act is voluntary. Voluntary compliance. Long story short, Northern Metals now had to admit that they are liable. That they say they were, their records, they were altered and they did it. And the records were not accurately kept, which is a violation of the permit and the consent decree for that $2.1 million. They said that they will shut down the shredder permanently next Monday and the scrapyard dollars and transfer the stations, the money to the on-site. They said they will agree to pay a civil penalty of $100,000. Northern Metals does not admit to any exceedances of air quality standards or air emission limits. Well, if you're lying about your tests, how could we ever prove it? Right? And they get their managers are getting bonuses as we're sitting here. The MPCA will reopen the permit for the Becker site up north, where they're moving their crusher, onto the river in Becker, right by St. Cloud, right by the other XL Sherco 3 plant. We aren't making progress, people. We have to stop this, and I'm going to give you an opportunity to help us. Because Botno proved that the people living around the Lowry Bridge in 2016 get sick of cancer and asthma, 330% higher rate in this area, in a scientific study of 19 years of dead people, a morbidity study, mortality study, than they do in Western Hennepin County. Now we're doing another test. We got a lot of it. Now the next thing is I need 40 people on Saturday the 28th for 2 hours. And we're going to carpet bomb this whole area where the plume of Northern Metals and GAF is going out. We're going to go carpet that area and tell people that this survey is coming, and please answer it. Because if we study the living, that's the next phase. First, you have to study the dead. The dead told their story. Now we got to get the story from the living. And when the living tell the story of how often we're getting sick and not dying of air pollution-related cancers and asthma, then we get to the point where we can sue the MPCA for not enforcing the Clean Air Act, because that's the only thing we can do to make them do their jobs. You have to have facts, you have to have complaints, and you have to sue them. And that's been the case since 2007, when they disbanded the Environmental Citizen Board in this state under Governor Pawlenty. Thank you very much.
Right where the river flows.
washed my muddy hair by the banks of the Ganges. I heard a whisper there from my mother and my mother's mother. They were singing to me.
Right where the river flows.